That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly mini-sode where we dig into the things that we've been watching recently, I believe. I'm Terry.
And I am Mary Beth, and this week we are chatting about ritualistic murders and ancient gods, one of my favorite things, haunted animatronics, when hand jobs lead to murder, okay, gothic horror anime times two, and an audacious video game-inspired cyberpunk multiverse.
Huh. A lot. Just all over the place.
A lot. I'm really excited about what you're bringing to the table this week. but really quick, before we jump in, we are going to have 2 weeks off from Little Cuts because I am going on my honeymoon, finally, / 1 year anniversary trip.
Yeah, bitch.
Yeah, bitch. I'm going to be in Japan for 2 weeks with my husband, and that's kind of cool. I haven't gone on a real vacation in a really long time, so I'm super stoked. We will still have regular feed episodes every Monday. We just won't have the Little Cuts episodes for 2 weeks.
And we'll I will also be going on a very small vacation. Definitely not as exotic or as long as yours, but I'll be going to New York for a weekend, and I'm really excited for that.
To see good friends, which is so much fun. Yeah. You get to hang out with good friends, which is very exciting. So it's travel time in the Scarred for Life universe. I'm ziplining into Godzilla's mouth on Halloween, and I bought a Mothman onesie to wear on the streets of Osaka on the day of Halloween. I'm very excited. I don't think anyone... That's not fair. Mothman, I do not believe, is, like, probably that popular in Japan, so I cannot wait to just have a Mothman onesie. I mean, it's not going to be the weirdest thing there, probably.
Yeah, no, just absolutely moth. Not. I can't wait to see the pictures.
I'm so excited. But I want to hear about ritualistic murders and ancient gods, because, like, that sounds like my shit. So tell me what this is.
So this is a last-minute entry, because I literally just got this email out of the blue asking if I wanted to see this movie that's currently out. I think it's streaming on Tubi, and it's also available to rent. And I was like, sounded interesting, sure. And so I got a screener for this movie called Older Gods, which I had never heard of until right now. Literally, right when I started watching the movie, when I got the email, was the very first time I heard about it. And it is a slow burn cosmic horror movie about this man whose best friend committed suicide and sends him this weird package with a bunch of photographs, a bunch of, like, drawings that are very weird. And he gets this USB that has, like, videos of his friend where he's, like, talking about how he was part of this expedition that was looking into these cases where there were, like, ritualistic murders that were carving circles, like, two circles with one within another each other, into the bodies, and they're talking about some ancient deity that existed before humanity, and discussing about how, like, this idea of this primordial fear that the universe is so vast and infinite that you realize how, like, horrifically insignificant you are in the grand scale of existence, and the wonder of this idea that we are all just a dream of this ancient deity that has existed since time immemorial. And so we're following this man that goes back to his friend's childhood home in Wales and is basically trying to figure out what led to his friend's death. And weird things start to happen. He's, like, being watched outside his house by someone in this black ceremonial robe. He is listening to the the recordings of his friend, and he's starting to see that maybe there is someone that was after his friend and now potentially after him. And this reminds me of Resolution era Justin Benson, Aaron Moorhead.
Oh.
Not as good. I think the script, it does a lot more telling than showing. There's a lot of exposition dumps. And I kind of think that the weakest part of it is the script, because it looks really good. It's decently acted, and there's some really cool effects. Like he's having these dreams about this ancient being that is speaking in some demonic language, and there's subtitles on the screen, and it's like shots of space, and there's a shot of like this alien landscape that is lit by a blue sun. And there's this very haunting image of him standing in a field with like some weird obelisk coming down from the sky. Like there's some really trippy imagery and some really cool moments. I just think the script is a little hit or miss for me. And I kind of wish that they had maybe that the writer and director, this is his debut feature film, David A. Roberts. I wish that the script is a little bit more fully cooked. But for what it's doing, I thought it was interesting. It was a decent slow burn, and I'm curious to see what he's going to do next. That's the kind of vibe I got from this film, that it was like, there's good bones here. I just think that maybe some of the ambition was a little bit bigger than maybe the budget. And also the script is just a little weak, but it was entertaining, and it was interesting to watch, this pretty much a one man, stuck in a house dealing with existential dread and the potential that we are meaningless in the grand scheme of things.
Is it like, have you seen the last song?
You mean Dark Song?
Yeah, Jesus, Dark Song. Not last song's a Miley Cyrus movie. Sorry.
Oh boy. Yes, I have seen that, and I think
have vibes of that.
It does. I don't think the ending of this is anywhere near as creative as that movie.
Okay.
It's a very interesting movie. It's definitely a good slow burn. It's on Tubi. And I do think the biggest problem is that we have this video of his now dead friend that is basically laying out the whole lore in us in like exposition dumps. And that is the biggest issue I have with it, because it's like, oh my God, we have another exposition dump.
Yeah.
But it's good. Okay. I enjoyed it. Yes. Okay. Haunted animatronics. I know what this is, and I'm dying to hear what your reaction is.
So, this is Five Nights at Freddy's. Get excited, everybody, which is out now. As of the day that this episode drops, it is out in theaters and also streaming on Peacock. So, for those of you unfamiliar, this is based on the big viral video game sensation Five Nights at Freddy's, where you play a security guard working at Freddy Fazbear's Pizza, which is basically like Chuck E. Cheese, and you are trying to protect yourself from the crazy haunted animatronics that are coming for you. It's like, I played the first one, it's super simple, it's got like found footage vibes, because you're supposed to be looking at these grainy cameras to see where the animatronics are coming, and the only place you're safe is the office, and so you have to figure out the best ways to keep them out. And I am not big on the Freddy Fazbear lore. I do not fully know the lore. I am not caught up on the lore. I know the games. I know what they are, and that's it. So like, this is the baseline for where I'm coming at this movie from, for all the Five Nights at Freddy's fans out there. I was actually excited for this movie because, one, it's a woman directing it, Emma Tammy, who did The Wind.
The
Wind, which is like a slow burn Western horror movie, which is so good. And then she makes fucking Five Nights at Freddy's. So like, give women IP, baby. I was excited to see what she was going to do with it. Like, look, I know that people are like iffy on Pet Sematary Bloodlines, but I still think that, you know, Lindsay Beer was doing something interesting there. And Five Nights at Freddy's is a similar situation where I think it's fun. People are not going to like it, but I think it's really creative for what it is. And it takes something that is so like the IP and makes something like a quite interesting story, but it does overcomplicate it. Like you can Emma Tammy wrote the screenplay with Scott Cawthon, who created the original video game series, with another writer, Seth Cutbeck. And you can definitely tell that, like, Scott Cawthon's hands are all over this, and I can guarantee you she was trying to make something interesting on top of probably what he wanted out of the movie. And I know this was in development hell for a long time, and it was, like, all this crazy shit. But basically what we get is a very interesting movie about a guy whose mental illness is so bad he can't hold up a job, and he's trying to figure out how to, like, keep his custody of his sister. So he works at Freddy Fazbear's and is, like, there's, like, dream world things happening. Like, this is almost like Five Nights at Freddy Krueger. This is what I was calling it to Josh Korn guy. I'm not kidding. There's, like, weird dream theory stuff going on with, like, the ghosts of the kids. Like, in the game, it's ghosts of kids possessing these fucking animatronics. So they play with all that lore really interestingly here. And, like, yes, it is incredibly overcomplicated. It is almost 2 hours long. There are too many things going on
in this movie. Yeah, I saw that. I was like, 2 hours? It's
absolutely too much going on in this movie. And, again, I 100% appreciate for what it's trying to be. I think it's a very good, like, gateway horror movie. Because this is meant for children. Like, let's just, like, get on the same page here. This movie is meant for children. This is a video game for children. And that's not a bad thing. I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. The demographic for this movie, though, is very young. And it's still very smart. I think it was so cute. Like, I was walking into the theater, and this guy with his son and was like, if you get scared at all, just let me know and we will leave. Aww. And the kid was so excited to be there. And I was like, this is this kid's, like, first horror movie. And, like, something about being, like, hearing that. It's cool. I think this is going to be a lot of kids for, like, I guarantee you, if someone is scarred for life, like, in, like, a couple decades, like, this movie will probably be on a lot of people's lists. And I don't think it's necessarily that scary of a movie, but for a kid, it's definitely scary. And there's some really interesting, like, I think there's some cool kills. It's PG-13, so they don't show a lot, but I don't know. I was really impressed by it. It's super bizarre. It's, like, weirdly campy. Matthew Lillard's really good in it. Mary Stuart Masterson is really good in it. Like, all of the performances are really good. The animatronics, which 7 feet tall, designed by Penson Studios, look so good. Like, the practical effects.
That's the thing I noticed when I see, like, the pictures of them. They look really good.
They look, it's kind of freaky how good they, like, it's, I'm so glad they did it this way. It would have looked terrible if they didn't. And they, like, it makes all the difference in terms of, like, how the stakes of the movie and it feeling real. It's really cool. And again, people are going to shit on it, but if you take into account what it is and who it's for, and also just, like, how incredible that this movie exists and, like, isn't total trash, I'm pretty into it. So, letwomendirectmoreip.tumblr.com, because then you get weird, crazy shit like this, where it's like Freddy Krueger, but animatronics.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I've heard, like, very mixed things. Like, some people are either, like, really on its wavelength or think it's not good at all. I do think, like, from the lore perspective, that maybe they could have eased maybe into that, as opposed to, it sounds like there's a lot of lore from the games in this movie.
It felt so much like they weren't sure if they were going to get a second movie and they didn't want to make this a series. It felt like they were trying really hard to put everything in the movie so it makes sense. And I also, I mean, like, I don't think I really realized this, because, like, I know that the Five Nights at Freddy's people are rabid, but, like, the lore arguments that go on about this game are, like, really intense, apparently.
They really are.
And I was like, oh, I guess if, I wonder if they, like, tried to take that into account about, like, if people are going to be weird lore heads about this whole thing. And I haven't done a deep dive into the lore, because maybe I'll save that for my plane ride. My 15-hour plane ride to Japan. I'll spend all 15 hours diving. I'll spend all of my trip money on internet just so I can read Five Nights at Freddy's lore. But yeah, I mean, like, for what it is,
I mean, there
it's
are like,
kind of like a cool thing that it exists. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of neat.
There's like multi-hour YouTube videos dedicated to the lore. Like, we're talking like multiple hours.
I mean, okay, That's fine.
I don't like that Scott Cawthon is a shit.
Is he?
Yeah, he voted
for... I don't know any...
He's a Trumper. He voted for a lot of anti-trans and anti-LGBT candidates. He's, like, given money to those. Yeah, cool. He's a character.
I knew he was a character. I just assume a lot of those guys are kind of shitty. You know, it's all
scary. I mean, it's the Notch effect, right, with Minecraft, where Notch made something that is enjoyed by many millennia of people and then turns out to be a horrible individual. It seems to happen.
Oh my god, I need to stop looking at the... I was vaguely looking at it, and I was like, oh my god, the lore, it's too much. There's too much on the Wikipedia.
Too much.
Oh, there's too much.
That's like all rabbit hole upon rabbit hole upon rabbit hole.
It's like Evangelion, but even more complicated, which is wild, because Evangelion is nuts.
Oh my god. Is Five Nights at Freddy's Evangelion for the kids?
I don't want to think about that. I mean, they're giant robots.
You're welcome.
Pilot the robot, Freddy. Okay, I want to hear about hand jobs leading to murder, though. Is what I need to hear about.
Yeah, pivoting wildly. So this movie, I guess, premiered at South By, and I totally didn't even know that it premiered at South By. And then it was unceremoniously dumped onto VOD without any fanfare, from what I understand. It is a movie called Down Low, which is starring Zachary Quinto and Lucas Gage.
Oh, okay.
And Zachary Quinto plays this man who is deeply repressed, and he just got out of a marriage with a woman. He has two kids. He found out he has a brain tumor and he's not going to live for very long. So now he is living in this very expensive home by himself. He says that his kids don't want to talk to them. His wife has made cards, basically, like, in a very funny moment, she makes these cards that I guess are going out to like friends and stuff, that talks about how he is now out of the closet and homosexual and not part of the family or something like that. Like, it is very weird. And the movie starts with him hiring a masseuse, played by Lucas Gage, and he asks for a happy ending. And there's this funny... There's this funny extended period of time where, like, Lucas Gage is listening to his very young music, and he's, like, going to town on Zachary Quinto's character's dick, and he can't get into it because the music, so he asks to change it to, like... something else that is like classical, and it just turns into like this really funny moment. And then Lucas Gage's character, his character's name is Cameron, finds out that this is Gary, Zachary Quinto's character, his first male intimacy with another guy, a male on male intimacy. And he's like, oh my god, you're out of the closet now, you're a new gay. He's like, you're not a gay until you've hooked up with a stranger from an app. And so they get on this app, they create like a profile, they get this mask guy who's like, his name is Looking to Suck, and he comes over. He comes over, and then something happens.
I'm sorry, I'm stuck on that. Looking to Suck is just like stuck in my head.
And then something happens, and I'm not going to spoil it. Some reviews spoil it, but something happens, and then before you know it, we are in 90s dark comedy territory, very bad things territory, but it is very queer, it's very funny, it goes to some wild places, and it's a very entertaining, dark, queer comedy, and we don't see those at all. Much.
Okay. Huh.
And it was co-written by Lucas Gage. And it's just, he's a delight in this. He is so good in this movie as this very uninhibited masseur that ends up getting stuck in a very unpleasant situation.
Cool.
Yeah. Judith Light is in it as Gary's neighbor, who's very nosy and on Ambien, and She shows up at one point, very funny. It's just, it's a good, funny, dark comedy. I was laughing a lot.
Okay.
So yeah, that's Down Low.
That's out now?
It's out now. It's out on now on VOD.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Gothic horror anime times two.
Okay. So I've been watching a lot of anime recently. Shocking. And I've watched two things that are not super similar, but kind of similar. So the first one is Castlevania Nocturne, which is the new season of Castlevania, which takes place quite a few hundred years in the future from the original. This takes place in the 1800s, and the original show took place, I think, in the 1400s, I think. But it's multiple generations, basically, since Trevor Belmont and Sypha get together, and now it is Richter Belmont. So Richter Belmont is the seemingly last remaining Belmont, brand new protecting the world from vampires. And he... it takes place in France during the French Revolution, and on top of revolution, there are also vampire nobles that are kind of taking over the land, and all of this kind of comes together into a show about vampire hunters trying to fight Elizabeth Bathory, who is the vampire messiah. And everyone has also seen probably a lot of the fan art of Ulrochs, you know, like something like Orlok. Ulrochs is kind of like the Dracula-ish stand-in, so he's like a vampire, but he's like not, and he's like really powerful, but he's not really a bad guy, but he's queer, and he's a very queer character. He is voiced by Zahn McLaren, who is a really awesome indigenous actor, and Ulrochs is an Aztec, an ancient American indigenous vampire, which is really cool.
Oh.
And also, this season also has a really badass black vampire, and there's also a really incredible black female lead named Annette. And so a lot of this is about revolution, not just the French Revolution, but a lot about the slave rebellions in the Caribbean during that time period. And Annette's character and another character escape from slavery are part of the rebellions, and they come to France to find Richter to fight the vampires, because a lot of the slave owners in the Caribbean are vampires. So there's a lot of really interesting stuff here going on with, like, slavery and freedom and kind of, like, really digging into that in a really fascinating, really cool way, especially for an animated show on Netflix. And if you are a fan of Castlevania, you will love this. The animation is even better. It's so beautiful. It is incredible to watch. And you blow through as 8 episodes in the first season. And we blew through it really quickly. If you're game fans, this is based on I think it's Castlevania Rondo of Blood Symphony of the Night are the two kind of gate comparisons if you're looking for the game comparisons.
I need to go back and watch the original Castlevania, because I watched the first season when it first came out. I think it was like, 6 episodes or something like that. It was very short.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
And I really enjoyed it. And then I never continued watching it. And so I need to go back, because I hear it's very queer. Is this also very queer? It sounded like there's some queer characters.
Oh, this one's even queerer. I mean, like, Castlevania is very queer, but it's weird because it didn't start out as queer, and it got even queerer as the seasons went on. But Castlevania Nocturne is queer out the gate.
Hell yeah.
Again, because it's like, technically it's like, you know, the next season, but it's a new, I don't know, you know what I mean? It's like technically a new thing, but not really. So this one is really queer right off the bat.
Hell yeah. I'm excited. I was thinking about downloading them for my my flight to New York and just blow through.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, that is a really good watch, especially for the weekend if you want to watch something spooky but fun. Would highly recommend that one. And then the second one is also really good for spooky. But it's very goofy and also spooky. It's called Undead Murder Farce.
Okay.
So it takes place in the Victorian era. It starts out in Japan with this guy who is half Oni, which is a Japanese demon, essentially. And he is, like, one of these rare hybrids of these ancient monsters and a human. He's very powerful. And then he comes across a woman who's in a maid outfit, who's carrying something wrapped, a very large thing wrapped in cloth on her back. And she's also carrying a cage. And in that cage is the head of her master.
Oh.
Her master, who is an immortal. Yeah. So.
Wow.
So, yes, she is this immortal being who comes up to our hero here. And her name is Aya Rindo. And she comes up to Sugaru Shinuchi, who is our Oni boy, and Shizuku Hase, who is our maid. And together they're like, we have to go look for my lost body. And so they start traveling across the world to go to Europe to find her body. And along the way, they fight vampires. And then at one point, they meet Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty. And they fight the Phantom of the Opera and Arsene Lupin and Jack the Ripper.
All right. So you had asked beforehand if you had talked about this and you'd mentioned a little bit about the head in the case. And I was like, this sounds so familiar. And it just hit me now as you're talking about it, that this is actually an anime that my friends Tally and Tyler, who I'm going to be visiting in New York, have recommended to me. And they explained it to me. And they were like, you're going to really like it because they fight Jack the Ripper and they fight like they started listing. And so that is why it sounded so familiar to me beforehand. I'm like, have you talked about this? I don't think you have, but why does it sound so familiar? I now know why.
So it's just like these three badass like Japanese dudes come in to and like freak out all of the European people who are like, what the fuck are you doing here? And they're just like, we're smart. And they're like, you're a head in a cage. And she's like, yeah, so. And like her maid, the thing wrapped in cloth in her back is a giant gun knife combo.
Sure.
And she's like super obedient. And it's just like, it's so badass. Like it's so silly. And like, it's just like, it's like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen vibes, but through the lens mm-hmm. of a girl who only is a disembodied head and her two henchmen who are like, the man who is half Oni is like a complete idiot, but he's really strong. And the woman is just like, very, very, like, somber and very, very, like, serious. It's ridiculous, but it's really fun. Oh, yeah. So it's, like, silly, like, irreverent. It's silly, but yeah. Then it's serious, and, yeah, it's very strange, but I've liked watching it so far.
What's that streaming on? Is that on Crunchyroll? Okay. Everything's on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, you can stream it on Crunchyroll.
Hell yeah.
So I would highly suggest that if you are trying to find something to watch and you're looking at something like kind of fun, but a little spooky, if you like Victorian, like gothic things, you should check it out. But then tying this all together with an anime potential Evo, an audacious video game inspired cyberpunk multiverse?
So this has actually a lot more in common with Castlevania because this is Shankar's world. We just live in it. This is his new show that just, because he's the producer, maybe creator of the Castlevania series as well. And so this is Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon remix, which is streaming on Netflix right now. And it is, this is the Ubisoft multiverse that I didn't know I needed. This is a Ubisoft produced show that takes a bunch of characters and or themes from a ton of Ubisoft video games and puts them into a 1992 alternate history United States where a technocracy has technocracy
sure
named Eden has like grown up out of the ashes of America, and it is a fascist government that has a spokesperson of Rayman. Are you familiar with Rayman? The little disembodied
hand? That's so crazy. Steve and I were like, why does Rayman have a gun or something like in a still on Netflix? Is that on Netflix?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, because we were like, why is Rayman armed and deadly and ready to fight?
Yep, he is the mouthpiece of this fascist government. He has the show. He's on the news.
Shut the fuck up.
Uh-huh. And it is basically taking like Suicide Squad angle where we have this incredibly queer Captain Dolph Laserhawk who is
fuck yeah.
Who has
fuck yeah.
Who is like a rebel with his boyfriend Alex, and this is in the very opening moments of it. It Alex betrays him, and he ends up getting taken by Warden, who is basically the Amanda Waller of this universe. And he is leading like a ragtag group of people, including Beyond Good and Evil's Jade and Paige. I don't know if you ever played those games or that game or if you're familiar with it. But Jade and Paige, Jade is a human. Paige is a humanoid pig hybrid that she calls her uncle. And they are in
this
group.
What's the game called? Oh, I found it.
The game is called Beyond Good and Evil.
Oh, yeah. Look at him.
Yeah. And so, and an assassin that is a bullfrog. His name is Bullfrog, and he is a frog that is also an assassin from Assassin's Creed.
Thank you so much for explaining that to me. There's a bullfrog. His name is Bullfrog. He's an assassin who's a frog from Assassin's Creed. Thank you, Terry. Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome.
The assassin Bullfrog.
Named Bullfrog. Who's also a frog, by the way.
Oh,
and it just it's such an audacious show, and I am like, Rayman is a coke snorting TV presenter who at one point gets pissed off because he's replaced by
a kid, that's why I'm laughing.
Did you?
Yes.
He gets replaced by an AI version of himself at one point, and he's wandering around in his disembodied underwear, like just his underwear, and he's like had like a robe, and he is just snorting coke like nobody's business. And it's just the fact that Ubisoft signed off on this. Oh, Rabbids, the Raving Rabbids show up as giant kaiju monsters at one point. It's wild. And what's even better is, I'm not going to spoil some of the surprises, but it is a celebration of video games. At one point, they're doing a stealth mission, and it turns into, like, a top-down Metal Gear Solid, like, original Metal Gear Solid-esque, like, little sprites trying to hide from criminals walking back and forth. FMV, the full motion video from, the 90s, makes an appearance in here. It's just, it is a delightful, delightful show that had me rolling in from laughter. It is so good. It is Adi Shankar's new thing, and I love it so much. I need people to watch it so that it gets renewed.
Okay, that's funny, because Steve and I were talking about that, about it, and I was like, what even is this?
It's wild. And it's by the producer of Castlevania. So
that makes sense. The animation's, huh? Okay. Rain Man snorting coke is a very funny thing for me to think about. Just as a child who loved Rain Man, it's just very funny.
I know. That's why I'm like, I cannot believe. And it's very violent. Like, this thing is violent and sexy and just bloody, and it's ridiculous. And it surprised me every time it turned around. Like, there are a lot of twists and turns in this, and I loved it so much.
Hell yeah. And what's it called again? What's it called again?
Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon remix.
Fuck yeah. All right, cool. Hell yeah.
And it's inspired by... So Far Cry 3 did an expansion pack called Blood Dragon. And so this is inspired by that, but it's just takes this idea and runs with it very, very far.
Alrighty. Yeah. Well, that makes me want to watch it, because I wasn't really sure.
It's hilarious.
Now you've convinced me that it's worth checking out.
Highly recommended. And I don't hear people talking about it that much, so I think more people need to watch it.
Okay, watch it.
Consider this your homework assignment while we're gone, listeners. It's only like, I think it's 8 episodes. It's really short. They're 20-minute episodes.
Oh, yeah. Netflix is good at those. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's a week. That's like a day.
Yeah.
It's an afternoon.
It's very bingeable.
Cool. All right. Well, Terry, who are we talking to on Monday?
Okay. I'm very excited for this one. It is a little bit against type in terms of movies that we typically cover, but we are chatting with Sean King O'Grady, who is the director of We Need to Do Something, which is based on the novella by former guest Max Booth III. And he's also the director of the just-released The Mill on Hulu, which is a really good dystopian science fiction, anti-capitalism movie that's really, really good. Stars Lil Rel King. Really good. And he brought with him Dr. Zhivago.
Happy Halloween.
It's this is a movie that's obviously not a horror movie, but it is a 3 hour and 20 minute horror movie.
It's a horror movie. And
it created really, really good conversation. And I think this is one of my favorite conversations of the year. And it seems to happen a lot of times when we talk about movies that aren't horror, because we did this with The Killing Fields. That took me a moment. Where it's like we have a really good conversation about a movie that's not horror. And I feel this was a really interesting conversation about the movie, the book. It was fun.
It was fun. It was wild to watch Dr. Zhivago. It's not my kind of movie, so.
Not my kind of movie either.
My kind of movie. If you're looking to get real sad.
Maybe just read the Wikipedia page.
Yeah. We go through it pretty in depth. Get ready to be sad. Because boy oh boy, Russian literature ain't happy. That's for sure. Well, anyway, listeners, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. When we're back in 2 weeks, what do you want us to chat about? We should probably start up those series that we were doing again. Our Patreon will be back at some point soon. There's so many things that are coming back. So we want to hear from you about what you want to hear us cover on this, on Patreon. You can let us know via email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. I am at MB McAndrews on Twitter and Blue Sky, and I am on Instagram as at MB.McAndrews.
And I'm at Gailey Treadful.
Across all those social platforms.
And
then, obviously, if you don't follow the podcast, what are you doing? Follow the podcast at Scarred Podcast on Blue Sky and on Twitter. And you can follow at Scarred for Life Podcast on Instagram.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe. And as Mary Beth said, we will be bringing back Patreon. So I know there's a couple people that have messaged that are waiting for it. It will be happening once these vacations are out of the way and things have maybe turned back to a normal cadence. We will be hitting that really hard. And I'm very excited.
Me too. I'm also ready for it to be like normal. Thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you everyone for listening. Thanks so much. Good lord, my brain just completely lost the outro. Let me try that one again. Thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. And thank you everyone for listening.
Please, somebody please think of the children!